extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to... I almost said MLS today. That was the first time it's ever happened. Okay, cool.
We're keeping this. No, we're keeping this. This is the intro. Yeah. Come on, keep it. Keep it. Keep
I'm
it.
I'm in back shambles, up. But I will recover. You are listening to Extra Time presented by AT&T 5G. I, of course, am David Goss, otherwise known as Pipa Higuain. Alongside me, Gonzalo Higuain and Kalen Carr. We got that joke out of the way quickly so that we don't have to do it over and over again, which we probably will. And, of course, Kalen supporting the always playoff-relevant Atlanta United. On this, the midst of Jersey Week, which will continue, we love all our kits. There are jerseys, select jerseys that are 50% off if you go to MLSstore.com. So go out there and do that. I feel like I recovered pretty well.
You did. You said on the midst instead of in the midst, but okay. That's okay. You know, I'm nitpicking at this point.
No, I know.
Because that's an older brother. Wait, no, I'm the younger brother. That's the younger brother thing to do is to pick nits. Okay, Pipa?
Do you know that my favorite Higuain story of all time still is, I don't know if I've ever told this, on the way to the Copa Centenario final at Giants Stadium or Meadowlands, wherever it was, someone saw Pipa Higuain like in the back of a plane flying from Columbus to New York because he was injured and he had to book his own flight and he didn't know how to. And so he didn't know you had to like check in and pick a seat and all that stuff. And he ended up on the back of the plane, but all to go see baby bro do it. In lose once again in our Copa America.
They did not do it for the final, David. They did not do it for that final.
But I've always respected that story.
Happy to be a witness to whichever Higuain brother you are today, because I feel like I'm going to cut you some slack because you just got off MLS today. I was listening to that on my phone as I was looking for street parking. Then I come inside, I do this stream with you, and then later, I think I'm going to watch you host an MLS Works event with NYCFC up in the Bronx. So... yeah, I'm just a witness. I'm happy to be here.
You sound like kind of a hype man for David.
That's probably it. Yeah.
I like also, Kalen, street parking is theft. Get yourself an e-bike. Come on now.
Oh, good point.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Good point. I love being anti-car in this space. So Doyle is now welcome again to be called Doyle. He got his name back on that one. We've got a great show coming up for you from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. Of course, a wild weekend of action. We're going to dig back into the Supporters Shield race because it's back on with FC Dallas knocking off LAFC and the Philadelphia Union continuing to be basically an NFL team with the scores they put up week in and week out in the Eastern Conference. We will dig into the playoff races down towards the bottom of the East and West. Big matches this week. 5 matches on Tuesday night, 4 MLS matches, and the Campeones Cup on Wednesday night. So we're going to sort of go back and forth as we look back at the weekend, preview the playoff race, and preview the midweek action. Then, of course, talk all things Campeones Cup. Before we get started with the full show, yesterday was 9/11. I'm a New Yorker. It is obviously a tough day for many people. Just know that we are all in this together, and I'm sending my love out to everyone who needs it. Let's get started with our show here. Week 30 in MLS action. Doyle, let's go down south for you in your Miami region. What's the best thing you saw in week 30?
It was actually, I should be wearing the Atlantic hit, Kalen, because J.J. Peraza just had a weekend for the history books. He became the second true defender ever to score a hat trick. All 3 goals off of headers, off of corner kicks. By the way, shout out to Justin Morrow because he technically had a hat trick in 2017, though he was more of a wingback than a defender, but I don't want that to go unremembered. Anyway, J.J. Peraza had himself a hat trick, but he was also on the wrong side of both Toronto FC goals. Like, the first one, he just got beat. Second one, he committed a foul in the box for a penalty. So he basically outplayed Toronto FC 3-2 all by himself. After the game, he goes out and he dedicates the hat trick to Joseph Martinez, who had been suspended by the manager, and presumably the front office was good with that. J.J. Peraza is playing for a contract, man. Like, this guy's here on loan. So the huevos on him to come out and put in, like, one of the most remarkable two-way performances in MLS history to do that. And then to dedicate it to a guy who's maybe not going to be there next year and has beef with the coach and maybe the front – It was an incredible, like, it's a shame that Atlanta's basically eliminated from the playoff, because if he had done this, like, for real in a playoff race, it would have been like a 5-star, you know, write it down in pen, bright neon lights, MLS performance. Is one of the most, like, it was most one of the most remarkable weekends for any individual defender I've ever seen in this league.
I can't get over the fact that Atlanta United is irrelevant and they somehow get their drama front page week after week. They just don't even have to be mentioned. Like, you guys could sneak under the radar for a little while. No one's talking about you. And yet they continue to go, oh, us? Yeah, we're going to do another dramatic thing. And then we're going to double down on it by talking about it after we finally win a game in a relevant performance. Kalen, obviously, we all stand with you as a huge Atlanta United fan. We feel for you in these moments, but we are glad that you were able to have an up one weekend thing, on that one.
I got to say, just adding on to that, like because I didn't get to comment on this last week, but I was like, if I see, with all the years I played in MLS, if I see another table of chicken and rice anywhere sitting there, I think just regardless of any drama or beef or anything like that, you should be able to flip that table just again and again and again. So I feel for Joseph in that one. I actually didn't read too much into the comments afterwards, because it's Joseph Martinez. You're not gonna throw out your sort of like heart and soul of the team, especially the guys in the locker room.
You don't have to say
your hat trick to him. You don't, like.
The way I read it was like, we're still together. We're still a part of this together. We're all a brotherhood. I felt that was more the energy around it than like, bring Joseph back, or like, you know, in spite of the ownership group or anything like that. The players are going to stick together.
Here's the quote. This is from Peralta. The truth is, tonight is a very crazy night. It's not common for a central defender to score 3 goals, but tonight it happened to me. But it's because of the work from everyone on the team. It's about the work every day. It's not just the work of one person, not 2 or 3 people, not even the 11 players on the field. It's the work of everyone in this locker room, everyone outside who doesn't appear on camera but contributes a lot. It's the work of everyone, and I want to dedicate it also to Joseph, that he knows the group is with him, the group is united, and the group is very strong, and we're going to fight till the end.
Yeah, that's
didn't have to say it, Kalen. Didn't have.
But he's going through to be like the kit man, the, you know, the guy who Fair. Brings everybody. Yeah, you know, that was more the spirit of it for me. It was like, we're all in this together. Look, the other thing is, how often do center backs get interviewed after getting a hat trick? Or he may have just blacked out and Fair. Just thanked everybody.
He was Ricky Bobby during that.
He was trying to take it off himself. But yeah, I mean, incredible performance on the, you know, it was crazy because he scores the goal and then he gives up the penalty like a minute later. It was kind of all over the place. But the fact that he was able to continue to find it on set pieces, got to be troubling for Toronto. Just, you know, again, same problems for them. But for Atlanta, yeah. And then the goal by Almada was amazing too. I really liked that one. That was one
incredible,
of my favorites.
Yeah,
good player.
Incredible goal for him. Should have had 2, but didn't. Kalen, I would like to say, bold of you, that we are going to the Bronx together in a little bit, and you came out against chicken and rice, because we will be in a Dominican restaurant in like 8 hours. So you
no, that sounds
ready,
great.
I'm not playing defense for you at all.
That sounds great. It's the flavorless version that we get everywhere. Okay. In MLS.
Got it. I didn't know. I've never been in a locker room, I guess, so
it's
I wouldn't realize that.
It's a lot.
Kalen, from defender hat tricks to the front line, what's the best thing you saw this weekend?
I'm going to pick the striker hat trick. And you guys were talking about main character syndrome. Brenner was the show for me. You know, their huge win over San Jose, 6 goals. 3 for him. He had an assist as well. A really nice one to Yaya Kuba, I think, plays that through ball. The first goal he gets is like more of like a poacher's goal, where he's kind of goes on the back post. A little Chris Wondolowski. I always think of when somebody finds that spot on the knockdown. He had a 1-2 that he's playing earlier in the game. He didn't end up scoring it, but he was just everywhere. And then, starts to pile on late, as we've seen. We're generally used to seeing Philly put up 6, so it's funny. Yeah, but he kind of did it all.
My favorite part of it, Kalen, was like if you look at the box score, it's like 90 plus one, Brenner scores a second goal. 90 plus two, gets a yellow card, and then like 90 plus four, he completes the hat trick. So it's just like he was already having a great game. That, as you said, like main character syndrome. Like as soon as they had stoppage time, it was the Brenner show. He was great. He's been great this year, considering what he was last year. Like he's as remarkable a story as Brandon Vasquez.
Yeah, I think the yellow was for excessive celebration as well, which you have to respect. Yeah. And then when Absolutely. They get the penalty late, he goes and immediately sprints directly to the ball to go pick it up, which you want to see from a striker. You want to see he's in form. You want to pile it on. Yes, fragile San Jose team, but that's what Cincinnati right now, huge win for them, just kind of ran over them. So it was a big performance. No goal from Vasquez, but another, like the way they moved the ball. Yeah, the way they moved the ball. Yeah. Lucho again got involved. Doyle, I thought you did a good job, as usual, in your column. Hype up the column. Clap, clap, clap. On breaking down how Lucho's kind of progressed or changed the way he's picking passes or solving problems. So that's a good one for those who haven't read it yet.
I had a Chicharito dig there right in the middle of it, but like the moment got lost. You said you want to see your striker be really aggressive, pick the ball up and take a penalty. Maybe not in at least one market. Maybe.
Yeah, we might get
to it was okay, but you've got an hour and 5 minutes to get back and get another penalty, a Chicharito dig in. So it's still in your court now. I think Cincinnati has now won more home games this year than they had combined in their entire existence in Major League Soccer. So it's fun. Cincinnati fans, they've been there since day one. They have stayed in the stadium, but now they get to enjoy it. So congrats to all of them. I'm going to close out with my best thing I saw this weekend, and it's Jesus Ferreira, an MLS Academy young DP, being more game aware than Giorgio Chiellini, Maxime Crepo, Jesus Murillo, Franco Escobar, Ilie Sanchez, anyone else in the vicinity at the time. The foul happens, and Jesus gives the look, and Paul Arriola plays it to him quickly. It's still a tough finish, and everyone else is doing something different for LAFC, as if the game was just going to stop. That is what you learn in the MLS academies. It's that game awareness. It's that next level understanding that guys like Chiellini will never understand and they'll never be able to elevate their game to. Jesus Ferreira, two goals then. He scores the second one in a game where Dallas was bad, if you're being honest, and you watched the whole thing, up a man for 70 minutes and could not score or create really chances until those two goals. But they get the win. Huge moment at home. Jesus Ferreira has now set the record for the best regular season scoring mark in FC Dallas history. I believe he's about three goals away from passing Jason Kreis and Kenny Cooper for all time scoring in an FC Dallas uniform. Kenny Cooper was there to sort of anoint him and celebrate him. And he puts up an incredible season overall. He's still in the Golden Boot race. He also opens up the Supporter Shield race for all of us, which takes us into our first topic for the show. The Philadelphia Union, 5-1 winners over Orlando City. We were hopeful that Orlando would bounce back and not be on the emotional high. They weren't. Philly rips them apart. It is, when all these things happen, the best 5-game run now, after they had the best 4-game run in MLS history of goal differential and goals scored and all of that. Kalen, and Philly just continues to sort of mow through teams and ride towards the top of the Supporters Shield race.
Hold on 1 second. I will say, I think Jason Kreis still has way more goals for...
Yeah, still has way more goals. I'm looking at it now. Jason Kreis has 91
goals. Oh, it was just for the goals. Single season that he
single
was passing.
Season. Yeah. Got it. Yeah, Jason Kreis has 91 goals for... had 91 goals for Dallas. Kenny Cooper is at 46.
I appreciate you guys. Justice for Jason Kreis.
Gotta put respect
to Jesus Ferreira is at 36.
Right. All but right. For being, what, 21 years old? I mean, he's... If he signs a new contract, he's got
pretty
a good
decent.
Chance. And Kenny's, what, I think 10 goals past him all time, but has played...
Kenny's only at 46 in MLS, 52 total.
Okay. So you think, you know, with another good season, he's likely going to become second quickly, very quickly, and maybe chase down Kreis. But I think he's also tied for 18 for the season, but you'd expect him to get a goal throughout the rest of the year, right? He's been in great form. I thought even the way he took that one, especially on the first one. The second one was a bit, I don't know, you put it in a dangerous spot, good things happen when you do that. But the first one was what I loved, because he takes it just with that quick trigger with the outside of his right foot and just kind of hits it, you know, before Kripo is able to get set. So respect. But to Philly, yes, to Philly in this one. This was, you know, more of the same. More of the same for Philly. I think they said what I was listening today earlier. You guys said they underperformed because they didn't get as many goals as they're accustomed to in the past. But, you know, they just have so many different options. I think the way they were able to get in behind, speaking of outside of the right foot goals, Ura took his really well, very confident, showing his pace to be able to get in behind and finish. And they just have, you know, good on set pieces. They're, you know, all across the board. But the thing for me that still separates them and is almost beginning strangely to get lost, which they'll be happy about during, because it's not something we're accustomed for Philly of old, is the defense. They gave up one goal. It's kind of a fluke on a long throw in. But outside of that, not a ton of pressure. They control the game. And yeah, the goal differential and all that is massive. But part of it is, yes, all this huge, crazy goal output. But I think ultimately, as the games get tighter and you play against better competition, you look towards the playoffs, it's really that defense that separates them. When I look at maybe, you know, the favorites as far as Montreal, or you go even to the West and you say LAFC or Nashville or whoever it is, it's that back line that has always been there for Philly that stands out to me, that still puts them at this point. I think they've got a great, we'll probably get into the supporter shield, but they've got a great, I think they've got a really great shot right now. We'll see what happens with LAFC midweek. A little bit reeling right now, 4 losses in a row. So right now it does feel, I think it's technically in LAFC's hands, right? But it feels like with the way that they're playing right now, it feels like Philly's the favorite.
Yeah, I think it does. The way it stands right now is if both teams win out, they end up on 72 points. And the first tiebreaker in MLS is not goal differential. The first tiebreaker is wins. And I think LAFC would end up with, I think, 1 or 2 more wins than Philly. If they end up on the same total number of points, then it's going to be LAFC who win the shield. But yeah, 4 losses in 5, LAFC don't look like doing it. That said, I did actually think they played well against Dallas, even going down a man. Like, they were tough to break down until they had that, you know, catastrophe on the Ferreira goal. As for Philly, to you know, enhance your point, they're on track right now to have the second best defense in MLS history. Only 2010 RSL posted better defensive numbers in terms of goals allowed per game. But it needs to be understood in the context of that season. 2010 was the lowest scoring season in MLS history. It's about, I want to say, about 2.5 goals a game. This year, it's 20% higher scoring overall. Like, we're right at about 3 goals a game. And this, now part of that is due to Philly scoring a bajillion goals over the past 2 months. But, like, it's just a higher scoring league now than it was 12 years ago. So Philly allowing 22 goals over the course of the season, you know, even if they give up a couple more, it's, I think, more impressive than what that all-time great RSL team did. And then you add on to it that they now have one of the all-time great attacks as well. And to your point about Michael Ura, you know, the first half of the season, he missed a lot of time. And before this run started in about mid-June, Jim Curtin came out and said, you know, we're missing that one guy. Because the first 18 games of the year, Philly scored 22 goals. And Jim Curtin, in the midst of that, or maybe at the end of it, said, you know, we're missing that one guy who can make a special play. That one guy who can unlock a defense and, you know, turn these draws into a win. And I'm paraphrasing there, but that was the general gist of it. Well, Ura has gotten healthy in the second half of the year. He's still not really a 90 minutes every time out player. They're very clearly trying to manage him because he had some muscle injuries that they tried to rush him back and they got worse. But now he's back and he's playing at least about 70 minutes a game. So he's played 1,515 minutes so far this year. When he's on the field in those 1,500 minutes, the Union have scored 39 goals and conceded 9. in the 1,550 minutes he hasn't played. So it's almost a 50-50 split in terms of on-off for him. In the 1,550 minutes he hasn't played, they've scored 29 and they've conceded 13. So still a great team. Still, like, very clearly one of the best teams in the league. But you're talking about the difference between a plus 16 goal differential versus a plus 30 goal differential. Now, obviously, they score more per 90. They score 2.3 per 90 when he's on the field versus 1.7 when he's off. But they also concede fewer per 90. They concede half a goal per 90 when he's on the field versus 0.8 when he's off. On-off splits are messy. It's not always correlation, causation. Like, it's not always perfectly aligned. But when you see the way he works with Carranza and Gazdag, he's so good at stretching the field. He times his runs really well. He's very fast, and he's lethal on breakaways. Like, he doesn't miss breakaways. And so that's always in the back of the mind of, you know, of whoever he's coming up against. That in turn opens up space underneath for Carranza to get on the ball, for Gazdag to get on the ball, for Jack McGlynn, who's playing more minutes and has been fantastic, to get on the ball. So it's this virtuous cycle where everybody now on the field for the Union, their skill set amplifies each other. They're so good at making each other better. And when you have guys, like, every player on the field for them is like a top five player in the league at their respective position, top five at least, you're going to end up with a season like this. And it feels like it's all coming together and that they're freaking unstoppable right now.
The timing of it, too, is important, because we talked in the beginning of the season. We said Jim Curtin, they were getting results, and Jim came out to say, well, we haven't really played our best yet, right? And as time went on, we saw, as you mentioned, Ura, his impact, such a better player, or such a better team with him involved, and Gazdag was able to carry them for stretches while he was, you know, not healthy or fully fit yet to come in. Then you also think of the way they bled in these young players like a Jack McGlynn after the U-20 cycle coming in. They bring in confidence, but they didn't burn those guys out earlier in the year or put too much pressure on them. Kind of figured out the team shape, figured out the system. They come in, and then, you know, the other big thing for me is the outside back play. Just so good. Kai Wagner's, you know, I think, how many assists does he have this year?
15. He has 15 assists.
It's insane.
That's he also, wild. I'm going to get slapped down here, but I'm going to say it anyway. He starts for the best defense in the league, arguably the second best of all time, and he's got 15 assists. Is that not the defender of the year? I understand that the defensive numbers are not based on him, but come on.
So I think he's going to win the more coveted extra time fullback of the year award.
Wait, but think about it this way. How many center backs have won?
You know that fullbacks never get votes in Defender of the Year. Right?
Exactly. And this is not to throw shade.
Except when they have 15 assists for the best defense in the league.
I'm with you, because you think a lot of center backs get goals, right, off set pieces or whatever, and that ends up helping their credentials to win these types of
awards. Walker Zimmerman.
Right? And so we
got
say...
scored this weekend. Jack Elliott.
But I'm like, if you get 15 assists, that's got to... As a defender, the big knock is often, well, you know, it's tough because you don't have the statistics. How do we measure this? 15 assists to me is like Brad Davis numbers for a season. So I'm impressed. I'm ready
to give
him.
It's three behind Lucho Acosta. It's second in Major League Soccer. It's an astounding number. Anders would like to know, who else are your candidates for Defender of the Year, since I brought the topic
up? I think Jack Elliott has been the best defender in the league this year.
And this is going to be one of the issues, is that I think the Union are going to split votes across their team.
Yeah. Well, and then there would be people who say, well, it's not the defense, it's Andre Blake, or it's Jose Martinez. Like, right now, like, we just did MVP power rankings. I had Jose Martinez second in the MVP balloting behind Hany Mukhtar. Like, I think he's been that good, and he's, because, look, we just went through all of it, right? The Union have the second best defense all time and one of the greatest attacks of all time, and, like, the ball doesn't magically appear in the attack. Like, you have to get it from one side to the other. And Jose Martinez, with his ability to receive the ball in traffic and then spray to either fullback or play between the lines to Gazdag or Bedoya, who is also, like, still the most underrated player in the freaking league. Like Jose Martinez is, like, 96th percentile in all of that. And he's also, like, a 96th percentile or higher, just, like, basic D-mid hard man stuff. So I actually think, like, he's their MVP, and Jack Elliott's the defender of the year, and Andre Blake is, like, either first or second in goalkeeper of the year, depending on whether you think Georgi Petrovic has played enough minutes. Like, they should win all of those, or two out of three at least. But they might not win any because they're all going to split votes. And everybody who looks at the union sees something different about what makes them great.
Okay, well, as I was going through and saying
MVP and Golden Boot.
Well, as I was saying, like, center back scoring goals, get it. I still think Walker Zimmerman's got a good shout for it as well. I mean, being able to get forward and make big impacts on games. And then also, I think he's been super strong this year, you know, as usual on the back. And when he's been missing, you've noticed that with Nashville. So I'm also just think that MLS teams should invest more in that position. So it'd be a good precedent. We'll see what happens with a couple big contracts coming up next couple of years for other guys that are looking to also get paid. But yeah, I'd say he's got to be up there in the running too.
Pay Alex Collins, pay Aaron Long is what Kalen Carr is saying. Big win, obviously, for Philly. Let's go to the other half of this, which is LAFC continuing to lose is what has inserted Philly into sort of this front-runner position. So to be clear, Philly are 3 points up on LAFC. LAFC play tomorrow night at Minnesota. Philly does not play midweek. So then they will be even on games. We'll know what this situation is a little more. Doyle, you said it. LAFC go down to 10 men because Ryan Hollingshead red card in the 10th minute. A bit of a brain fart from him. And I do wonder him coming back to Dallas for the first time. A little extra adrenaline, a little extra emotion. He comes from behind on Paul Areola. There were large segments where you couldn't, if you had shown up, you wouldn't have known LAFC was down a man. The way Dallas played and the way LAFC played in that sort of stretch, but Cifuentes misses a pretty big chance. Arango missed a couple half chances. And Dallas are able to get the win in the end off the Jesus Ferreira insanity and all of that. Where do you sit for LAFC right now in terms of this Shield race and if they can actually close this out and win it?
So I actually thought that they looked better midweek. They won 2-0 over RSL. They crushed RSL. Like, RSL was never in that game. And then they looked really good in this one for 70 minutes, despite being down a man. Every team goes through a little malaise. I thought that LAFC were going to be somewhat immune to that because they did such a good job of acquiring veteran talent this past winter. Guys like Hollingshead, Ilie, Kellen Acosta, who have
Franco
been there,
Maxime
Coupeau. Yeah, guys who have been there before and knows they know what it takes to get through a whole season. But I think the character of the team changed when they made those moves this summer. And we've talked about this ad nauseum. Any team in the league that can get Chiellini and Bale says yes. We will take it. It's not like your favorite team. Whoever you are listening to this snickering at LAFC, it's not like your favorite team would have said, no, we don't want those guys. Like, any team in the league would have done that. But this is more than just a game of talent, right? It's a game of cohesion. It is the ultimate game of cohesion and chemistry and the whole being greater than the sum of its parts and all that stuff we talked about with Philly. I think LAFC kind of lost that with this summer window. I think that in the past two games, I've seen them start to get it back. And I think they're going to come out on Tuesday night against Minnesota, a wounded Minnesota team, looking significantly better. That said, we talked about Ura's on-off splits. I'm going to do Gareth Bale. It's a small sample size. He's been here, 2 months, and he's only played 313 minutes. In those 313 minutes, LAFC have scored twice and conceded 8 goals.
Two of those are his, right?
I mean, they've scored twice, so the, right. both of them are his, I guess.
Sure, sure. I hear what you're saying. Yeah, it's not. It's not a. And that's the question mark. Is like, is he a starter?
No, which... no, Kalen, he's not. he can't. He can't be. And the other thing is, you like, okay, if you say he is, then Carlos Vela has to sit. Because you can't have, like, neither of those guys get behind the back line in possession. Neither of those guys, you know those slip balls that you know, Bob Bradley's LAFC team lived off of? And, like, this team was hitting a ton of them early. Kwadwo Opoku gets on, like, six of them a game, right? Like, even when they're in possession, he's always trying to attack that space behind the back line. Neither Vela nor Bale does that. Not in possession. Bale will do it in transition all day long, but in possession, he does not do that. You cannot start two wingers who don't put the fear of God into the opposing defense about what's behind them. I just don't think you can do it. So one of these guys has got to be a super sub. Like that's the only way that LAFC get back to being the team they were through mid-August.
It is fascinating to watch the whole thing go down. Buonga got the start in this one. That's another DP. Christian Teo doesn't even play. He's a DP on this team. There's a lot of different elements going on. You brought up Minnesota.
The one thing I will say, the one last thing I'll say on LAFC is if they don't win the supporter shield, to me, this is a pretty big collapse. Losing four of your last five. And I would have said, I was actually more in the camp before to say, well, the supporter shield, they've won the supporter shield before in the past. So this is really all about cup. But I think for LAFC as a club, they care a lot about the supporter shield. And I think that this was something that they should have locked up if you look at kind of these last string of results. And it would be a little bit of a collapse. Now, on the other side of that, I actually think this last push, this fight towards the playoffs and this supporter shield, actually going after the supporter shield will help them towards trying to get into the playoffs and then eventually win MLS Cup. So I think they found themselves in a deep hole, but in a way, now I was thinking before, okay, well, you just got to figure out your best 11 before the playoffs and then, you know, roll it out and see what happens. But that's going to spell trouble, I think, from what we've seen. And with the congested schedule and the travel, they've made a bunch of changes to their lineup, some injuries here and there. Ilya was out. Kellen Acosta was out for a match. So they're trying to figure out how to get these pieces back together. But the front three shifting around and changing, there's a lot of pressure to play Bale, I think, and there's going to be a lot of pressure towards, you know, why he came here, playing towards the World Cup, wanting to be in his best fitness and form, and a lot of pressure as a manager. I've been in a position not to the scale of a Bale on the team, but where I felt I was the better option on a team versus a much higher profile or bigger name player at times, and at times I've gotten the call, at times I have not, and I would say Opoku is a talent that I think really makes this team click. But I don't know if he's going to always have the leg up when it comes to some of those tough calls. So it's definitely one to watch. I think for LAFC, they've got to actually dig into what is their best 11 like now and settle on that and really push towards the supporter shield. And that's their best path towards trying to have a successful one, get that trophy. But two, I think it's almost like these two are becoming more tied to each other than at first I thought they once were.
So let's go to this week. Doyle, Minnesota, they've not won since DiBassi has gone down with an injury. I thought this was a much better performance in Portland. They only give up one goal.
They're really good.
They were the better team for the first half. No Emmanuel Reynoso, no Fragapane, obviously no DiBassi. They were missing a few other pieces as well that I can't remember right now. A week ago, this game, I would have said LAFC is going to put up a sixth spot like Minnesota's in trouble. How do you see this now playing out midweek, and can Minnesota sort of rescue themselves to stay in the playoff race, or is this like an easy one for LAFC still?
Yeah, I don't think it's an easy one. Like at this point of the season, against any team that's in a playoff race, like it better not be an easy one. Adrian Heath actually shifted to a 3-5-2 against Portland, and but like Brett Coleman went down injured at the end of that game. They might not even have three cent. Well, I mean, Kamar Lawrence played left center back in this one, which is actually a spot I kind of like for him because he's so rugged defensively. But, like, they are scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of guy, like they don't have many guys who have
pretty sure
actual
Callum
MLS
Montgomery's
minutes.
Still injured, and that would be Callum the next guy on. And he's injured. And
so then it would be Naby Kibuguchi,
I guess
has been like he's been good in MLS Next, but he's like a 25-year-old MLS Next player.
Or so Arriaga.
I guess Arriaga's big, but he's never struck me as a guy who would be particularly happy playing on the back line. So it's like if they want to stay with the 3-5-2 for this game, they have questions at the back. They might have to stay with the 3-5-2 to generate any kind of attack because it's still not clear how fit or not Emmanuel Reynoso is. He missed this game. You know, he picked up an ankle knock. He missed this game. He has, in terms of percentage of touches in the final third for any given team, he has, like, by far the highest percentage in the league. Like, he's at, like, 25% of Minnesota's total final third touches are Emmanuel Reynoso touches. And, like, Carlos Hill is next at, like, 21%. So, like, they rely on him so much when they play that 4-2-3-1. So I thought that Heath changing, it was a really good decision. But if you stick with the 3-5-2, where does Fragapane play? Do you maybe play him as a number 10? I mean, I don't know that we've seen it from him in the past, though, in MLS, though I know he has played there in the past. And like, okay, that's a potential solution. But then you're relying on Luis Amarilla, who's, you know, pretty hit and miss, literally, in front of net, and Mender Garcia, who had like a Kevin Cabral-esque performance in Portland. Like, his runs were so good. He was
the
like,
back heel that deflected off a guy but almost went in was unreal.
Well, in the first one, in like the 12th minute, where he does this double move and just like leaves McGraw for dead at the top of the box, and it was such a good run. It was like a peak Joseph 2018 run to just like completely annihilate a defender off the ball and get like an open look from 6 yards out, and like he hits it right at Ivasic, who's been phenomenal, by the way. What I'm saying is that there's no obvious solution for Minnesota United. Like Adrian Heath has done a very good job in a lot of ways this year, but they are limited literally by the construction of their roster, which is built to optimize Emmanuel Reynoso. And now Emmanuel Reynoso is not available, potentially, probably even, during the most important stretch of the year. I'm not saying that the Loons are going to lose this one, this feels like, you know, it could end up being a breakout performance for LAFC given their recent form.
It's one of the biggest games of the midweek, Minnesota hosting LAFC. As we said, Supporter Shield implications. Before we move away from it, Kalen, we got to mention Portland did win 1-0 at home. They have gone from could they get in to fighting for a home game and like looking down at, oh, look at those teams that have to fight for a playoff spot. As of right now, Santiago Moreno's been big. Who else but Dairon Asprilla is going to step up with a goal this time of year? He, you know, I don't know, the groundhog came out of the ground. Whatever happens for him, whatever trees have to turn orange in Oregon for him to know it's time to start playing hard. Do you feel comfortable about the Timbers? Is it safe for me to sort of take them out of the RSL, LA Galaxy, Minnesota convo and put them safely in the playoffs?
I feel comfortable with that. Yeah, I think this match actually took them a long way. I mean, obviously with the proximity to the Loons, but I just think the way that they've been playing overall has really proven it. You mentioned Moreno, one of my favorite players. He was like juggling the ball over guys' heads at certain points in the game. I love that one. Williamson was, I just love watching him play every time he gets on the ball. He's just so smooth, just effortless, controls the game. And they just look so relaxed. Diego Chara, again, kicking into gear, making plays in the box more defensively. We'll see if we get to see one of those long runs. And, you know, they really haven't had to lean as much on Niazgoda as they did earlier in the year. He's been kind of buried in the bench as of late. I think he's still their leading scorer. So if they can get him hitting again and coming on, you know, whether that's off the bench or from a starting position, I mean, it's going to be tough for me to drop Dyron at this time of year. And Yimi Chara, I think, just brings something a little bit different with his movement to the team. So, I think this team is as we've seen in the past, you're just kind of like, well, I think the long stretch of the season, we're like, we're not even going to talk about Portland because it's like, I don't know, yeah. It's all a mess and it's a problem. And this, like, now it's, you're seeing, okay, they're kind of dialing in where they just, there are certain teams. And, you know, the other team a little bit north from them seems to be one of those two that just is able to kind of recognize and sniff out where it's like, it's September, huh? I think this is time. And that's kind of what it feels like for Dyron and the rest of the side.
Can I make a point about Portland? They have three games left. So basically everybody chasing them has at least one game in hand. I think the Galaxy have two. Their three games left are at Columbus, and that's a Crew team that's in a dogfight for playoffs themselves, home against LAFC in early October. As we just talked about, LAFC is going to be fighting for the supporter shield in that one, and then decision day at RSL.
That's tough.
They have a very, very difficult remaining schedule. I think it's the most difficult remaining schedule of any of the teams that are potentially in the Western Conference playoff race. What I will say is that I think a single win from any of those games is probably enough. It might even be a draw on that final day at RSL would probably be enough to get the Timbers in. But they, like, this four-game winning streak that Portland had, like, it was make or break for them. And Portland, they do it. Like, even the years back in, like, 2016 and 2014 where they missed the playoffs, they were still hot as hell down the stretch, you know, winning, like, four of their last five games. Like, this is just in their club DNA.
I throw out there one of RSL's last games is against the LA Galaxy as well. So, to make Doyle's point, if they pick up three more points, it feels pretty safe for them. How do you get everyone in the team, by the way, Kalen? You just played Dyron Asprilla at left wing back, which was technically where he was playing when he scored. Put him in the JJ Parada defender scoring goals conversation right now for Dyron Asprilla. All right, let's move to the Eastern Conference. Doral kind of gave us the rundown there at the bottom of the Western Conference. Let's talk playoff spots, playoff contention. Some big games this weekend. Columbus going up 2-0, and then Montreal pulling it back to tie it 2-2 after Luis Diaz's goal. Congratulations to Montreal. They have clinched a playoff spot. They are the third team this season to clinch a spot. It is the earliest they have ever clinched a playoff spot in their MLS history. They have their most wins already and their most points. So everything about what Montreal has done is the best from a regular season standpoint in Montreal history. And now if they can take that little Nacho Piatti pixie dust and throw it into the playoffs, this could probably be their best season in their club's history, which is really exciting. So congrats to Montreal. But fortunately for them, they are not a part of this conversation because we're going to talk about the other teams that are in this race. Columbus dropping those 3 points up in Montreal. They tie 2-2. They play Inter Miami this week. Inter Miami went on the road and lost at Chicago 3-1. Doyle, you are a member of the Inter Miami club. Would you like to speak for your squad? Are you done, or do they have one more shot this week?
They have one more shot, but it's like their margin of error is infinitesimally small. They have to win this game. Is it tomorrow night? On Tuesday night? They have to win this game against Columbus. It's the literal definition of a must-win game. If they get that one, then okay, it's kind of back on. They would be 2 points behind the Crew with four games left. You know, they would be 3 points behind Cincinnati with four games left. That's doable. Like, that is very doable. But anything less than a win, especially because their remaining schedule is very tough, anything less than a win, and it's good night to what has been actually, I think, a really promising Inter Miami season.
It almost feels like the Pozuelo red card may have been the straw that broke the camel's back of,
because they were outplaying the Red Bulls in that game. The first 30 minutes, they were outplaying the Red Bulls. I think they were already up 1-0 when Pozuelo got the red card, and then it just fell apart for this team.
Going out, not able to get the goals in Chicago for Inter Miami. On the flip side for Columbus, you could argue a point at Montreal is a good result. Kalen. Our friend Matt Doyle put this tweet out on Friday night, though. He said, good road point for the Crew, but they've also now dropped 17 points from a winning position that's 21st in MLS this year. Kalen, do you have any confidence in this Crew team to be able to close out a playoff run or in the postseason?
I still think this team will find a way in. This one was especially disappointing because it was kind of their own. They kind of met their own demise with the, was it Diaz kicking mm-hmm. through Kai in the back? Mm-hmm. Which is just like, you're up 2-0. This is, you know, difficult. You're playing against one of the best teams. And it was all kind of going their way at this point. And then it just turned on the head. I think it was the right call. You can't just like kick out like that. But then, you know, the issue for me more for them is it seems like they've been dropping points late on in games often. And it's just become a little bit of a habit where it seems like they're not able to quite kill a game right now. And you know, their Cucho's been great, obviously, in the season, get goals for them, but it's that it never seems safe. And I think this is one that if you do look back on it and they do find their way, you know, outside the playoffs, I still think they'll get in. I was trying to look at their schedule just now, as far as which matches they have left, but this is one that you'd look back on and be like, we were up 2-0 on the road against a team above us, Eastern Conference, we could have climbed. The way you talked about Inter Miami going against Columbus being must win for them, I think you could probably say the same for Columbus at this point, because it's not an easy stretch down. I got them pulled up now, where it's Inter Miami, right? Then it's Portland, we just talked about, who's in form right now. New York Red Bulls, always tough. Charlotte at Charlotte, and Orlando at Orlando on decision day.
That's for Columbus. So, that's their schedule down the stretch.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough one.
I think they'll find their way in. And I think they'll be a team that can actually do some damage if they do get in. Just because. Go ahead.
Can I give you the big issue with Columbus is like they just go into a bunker in the 75th minute if they like the game state. I pulled the numbers from my column, 75th minute and beyond in any game in which they're leading or tied, their league worst, tied with the Revs, league worst, -8 goal differential this year. They've given up 13 goals in that situation. This is a team that's only given up 33 goals all year. So more than a third of the goals they've conceded all year have come 75th minute or later when they're leading or tied. And that includes, obviously, the two goals they conceded in this one. Now, you could say, well, they were playing 10 down. Men, on the road against a really good team. Well, 2 months ago, they played this Montreal team. They were up 1-0 at home. They gave up two goals, one in the 88th minute, I think. Second one was in, like, the 92nd minute to lose 2-1. The same thing. They liked the game state, so they pulled everybody back into the box. They defended in Eloy Room's lap. And when Columbus do that, they stop getting pressure to the ball anywhere in central midfield. And, like, okay, a 26-yard shot is never a good proposition. But if you're giving a guy time to, like, stride into it, really wind up and smack the hell out of it, you open yourself up to exactly what we saw this weekend, which is, like, he got a good shot, he had a good rip, like took a deflection. Yeah. Yep. Like it keeps happening. And it feels, every time it happens, it feels like, oh, so unlucky at the time. But, like, if it keeps happening, you have to figure out why your luck is so bad.
Also, that game against Montreal, that was when they had, like, the 2.5-hour weather delay. So they had 2.5 hours to talk about how they wanted to close out the game. And they still sat in and gave up two goals in that stoppage time. So rough stretch for Columbus. They are the seventh team right now, so they are the final team in the playoff spots. Reminder, they played Miami about a week and a half ago and beat them 1-0. That was the game Pozuelo was suspended for after the red card at New York Red Bull. So that sort of also goes into show how big that red card could end up being for Inter Miami down the stretch. The other team in this conversation, I guess the other two, would be the New England Revolution, who are currently eighth in the Eastern Conference. They went to the New York Red Bulls and lost 2-1. Congratulations to Carlos Heel, who became a father this weekend. I'm sorry, Andrew Wiebe, just dying that he didn't get to be the one to say that. And his brother made his debut. It was the most Andrew Wiebe game of all time, but they did lose 2-1 at New York, and they currently sit in eighth place. The Revs going to Houston tomorrow night in MLS action, and then Cincinnati, the 6-0 win after the Brenner hat trick. I am anointing them qualified for the playoffs. Congratulations to FC Cincinnati for making the playoffs for the first time in your MLS history. It's done. It's dusted. David Goss, stamp of approval. That has never failed a team before, so I'm sure it won't happen today.
New York Jets and New York Knicks fan, folks. That's who you're hearing that from.
1969, greatest year in world history. We went to the moon and all my teams won. Nothing else after that in sports has ever technically existed. Let's take a look at the Revs for a second. It was always going to be tough without Heal. McNamara scores against the run of play. They go up 1-0. And it felt like the Red Bulls woke up at that moment and played a really good Red Bull game. They force some mistakes. They're able to create some opportunities. Casares comes out of nowhere to score. Doyle, it feels like the Red Bulls have sort of found their feet after the tough stretch post the Open Cup semifinals.
Yeah, they have. And you know, part of it is they're like a little bit less Red Bullish before in terms of where they're pressing teams. Like, they were dying over the summer because they were trying to do this, like, high, hard press for, you know, 90 minutes a game. And surprise, surprise, nobody has the energy to do that. Well, they've actually dialed it back, not in terms of the ferocity of the press, but just in terms of where they're drawing their line. Like, it's more of a midfield press, more of just, like, a pure counter press than it is, you know, drawing their line as far upfield as possible. So between that and then a couple of, you know, key pieces, I don't want to call them additions, but, like, Daniel Edelman's been great. He's been Jersey, so baby. Good at D-mid. Yeah. <You're>, bing bong. So, you know, a couple of things that have come together for him, and they've been able to ride out what like, it's still an attack that is like there's no one guy you lean on, and maybe that's a good thing. It hasn't been in the playoffs for them in the past, but certainly, you know, when you make the playoffs 13 years in a row, it suggests you're doing something right in the regular season. And I think Gerhard Schuber deserves a lot of praise for adapting when things a month and a half ago things looked like they were starting to go really, really bad for the Red Bulls. He adapted a little bit. He pulled the right, you know, levers, and you know, here they are. They're gonna have a home game at least.
And it's to your point of how they've changed. This is only the third game they've won where they've had 50% possession or more this season in MLS. It's only their fifth home win. So a lot of what's happening recently now, both those things happened against Philly last week and they lost, so it's not, you know, a catch-all, but it is a little bit different for the Red Bulls. They tried out the new striker, Manuel, I think, the Brazilian. He had the assist on Casares' goal. He looked very...
Hit the post, yeah, too.
He looked very much like Tom Barlow, Brian White, and I can't remember the Brazilian. Fabio. He looked very much Fabio. Like, oh, yeah, I'll create for the other guys, but I'm not going to score myself. So Red Bulls have that to look forward to, but they did get him on the field. As I mentioned, FC Cincinnati. So they are now sixth in the Eastern Conference on 42 points. Columbus has a game in hand on them, 1 point behind. But the Revs on 38 in eighth are equal on games and 4 points behind. So Cincinnati does have a little breathing space. Kalen, do you want to get on my train right now and anoint them?
Dude, I started my whole thing with a Brenner.
Yes, that's true.
Going through like each of his touches.
Kalen's team, it's locked
I'm
in.
I'm all in. I'm all in. Yeah, yeah. I think they'll be good. And I would say if I were to pick, yeah, them and Columbus would be. Well, they're in the last two spots right now. I think this match for Inter Miami is going to be huge. That'd be the one sort of place I'd hold out. I don't see it happening for the Revs. Just, you know, uncharacteristics. I think they're probably the only team or one of the only teams that's worse than Columbus as far as like allowing late goals this season, which was the exact inverse of the team that we saw crushed the all-time record as far as points last season. So it's just, it hasn't really worked out where they've been able to, you know, allow players to kind of really come right through the middle. Caceres comes through and plays a 1-2 and just waltzes right through the center of the back line. So some problems there for the Revs. And that's it. I'm not super sold on Red Bull as far as their playoff abilities, which is not a hot take these days, as far or just historically speaking. It's just, I can't help but say that the style of, that they play, I don't see that style work. I think teams don't make the same mistakes in the playoffs. I think teams tighten it up. I don't think teams will build out of the back as much as you'd think as they do in the regular season. And when you mentioned their home form, Red Bulls are high enough. They're too high. They're going to have to play at home. And so I don't think that suits them, because they like to give the ball up to the other team and then say, okay, here you go. Feel comfortable. Take it easy. Pass it around the back. Let's see what happens. And then pounce on the opportunity. So I just wanted to, I guess, you know, I don't want to do this to Goss, but maybe curb some your enthusiasm a little bit on Red Bull's chances. Which
all I was talking about, I never even mentioned the Red Bulls. All I said was FC Cincinnati.
Well, you were yelling Jersey, and you know, yeah.
I like repping New Jersey because I like trashing on New Jersey at the same time. I like being two-faced about it whenever I can. Right now, it would line up that I believe the Red Bulls would play Cincinnati in the first round at home, and then they'd travel to Montreal. That all could actually fit pretty well for them in terms of.
That's going to change much. We should not.
You don't want to do 42 minutes preview of the opening round of the playoffs?
No.
Let's go back to the Western Conference then, and let's talk sort of the bottom. Nashville 1-1 against the Galaxy. Insert your Chicharito penalty kick joke there. The Sounders, the big 3-0 win against Austin FC, and then RSL 0-0 against DC United. Let's start Galaxy. What did I just watch? What is this team, and what the hell is going on?
I think they might be cursed,
okay,
man.
That's a good answer.
Nashville had been smoking teams for the past 3 weeks. Like the almost union level in terms of how they were just ripping teams. Like, they beat the hell out of Austin. They crushed Dallas 4-0. Like, they had been playing so well. You know, went up to Vancouver with their backup team, and they posted a multi-goal win over Vancouver, and LA came in there and outplayed them. Like, they outplayed this Nashville team for, you know, basically 80 minutes. Greg Vanney did like this cool Greg Vanney stuff with the formation. Like, it started as a 4-4-2 diamond, but with Caceres at right back, he kind of slid in to make it a 3-5-2, and then Mark Delgado would slide out to become a wing back on the right side and Raheem Edwards on the other. So all of a sudden it was like a traditional 3-5-2 with Chicharito and you know, Cabral spreading the field, and Chicharito was coming underneath and combining with Vasquez and Puch. It was awesome. They played such good soccer, but they're cursed. What do you want me to say, man? This team is like, just in terms of what they do in front of goal, they're like one of the greatest underperforming teams in recent MLS history. If they just finished at an average rate, they would have like 8 or 9 more points, and we'd be talking about like, oh, are they going to finish second or third in the Western Conference. But between Cabral and Chicharito missing PKs every week, and Samuel Grandsir having like one good game in which he finished, you know, this entire year, they just don't put the ball in the net. They do everything right in terms of how they want to build the chain. You could see how well drilled they are. Like, they get the ball to spots where they want to have the ball, and they can't put it in the net. It's uncanny. And to do it on the road against a Nashville team that had been absolutely cooking and has, you know, one of the best defenses in the league, that tells you that, like, Galaxy have a lot of talent and are a really well-coached team, and that they're cursed. They're just absolutely cursed.
I did.
Anybody else think that Joe Willis should have saved that Puch penalty?
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
but it's hard. You can't criticize. But you save one. The first one, I actually think Chicharito.
I thought
well,
he took it well too. I thought it was a good save.
Yeah, It was a great save. And so it's tough to like be like, Joe, you got to save all of them, man. Like, but yeah, he got a full hand on it. I actually think it kind of came a little tight on him. He got a really good beat on it, and it seemed like it almost came behind him a little bit. But yeah, the penalty, can we go into the penalty?
Have you ever been a part of anything like this, Kalen? Where like a guy keeps fighting when no one else thinks he should be taking it?
No.
Okay.
No. Cause it's the general, I mean, I guess the guys for me, I played with Blanco. So he was like always going to take it, but he's, I don't even think I ever saw him miss one. But the tricky part is who's going to take it off him. Right. Cause it's kind of gotten to that point where somebody would need to take it off him. I think I saw that Vanny came out and said that Vasquez was supposed to be the taker. Is that right?
So
okay, I thought
Vasquez and Brugman both tried to take it off of him.
Right.
I think Brugman was trying to take it for Vasquez off Chicharito. Yeah.
To give it to Vasquez.
For the initial one, yeah.
Right, okay.
And then Chicharito was for me, subbed out for the second one.
But it's tough because here's the other part of it. You need Chicharito to like, you need the positive vibes, Chicharito, to get to the playoffs and to do anything if you get to the playoffs. So you can't just like pull the ball back off him from a 12 yards out and say, you missed the Panenka, you missed the next one. Like, you can't do this anymore. But we still want the vibes, we keep scoring goals or like, you know, through the run of play. And that's the hard part is you kind of need one version of him and not the other. And it's going to take somebody to just step up and take the penalty, right? And it's tough because the big thing that you do when you have a striker that's not getting goals is you want to give him an easy one from the spot, right? You want to set it down, get his confidence going, and you think, okay, if I just get this one, and he took it well, too, in this one, and he'd scored a Panenka before, and so then it goes from unlucky. But the real situation now is that these are, you know, 4 points that they've lost over the last two matches, right? It was the week before, and then it happens here again. And Puig, I had heard, never even taken a penalty before in his career and steps up to take one at the end. But for me, it's got to be Vasquez or Sasha Kljestan are the two names that I would call upon to say. And
well, now it's Puig. He was the one who took, like, it wasn't a great penalty, but he had the stones to get up there and take it.
Yeah. I don't know if I would want to. I don't know.
Kayla's not convinced.
I mean, it wasn't a convincing penalty for me. I would go with the experience and the veteran leadership to be, because it's also asking a lot of Puig to tell Chicharito, nah, this is mine now because I took the last one. And I'm not sure his personality fits into that.
Chicharito is 4-for-9 on penalties in his MLS.
Since 2010, he is the worst penalty
shooter
that it's taken six or more in MLS. So in the last 12 years, he has the worst conversion rate.
Worse than Maxi Morales.
I don't know if Maxi's taken six. That's the line that stat was based off. Maxi's bad.
Maxi got one in MLS Cup. He scored his in the final.
And here's the thing.
It's just hard because you can't lose it.
Just for the record, Kalen, Kwa was 7-for-8 in MLS and 24 for 29.
I saw Doyle start typing the moment Kalen said it and doing that research. To be clear, if I was Greg Vanney and we were in a PK shootout, Chicharito would take one. He's still probably one of the top five. It's not like he can never look at one again, like maybe Jonathan Osorio and Michael Bradley for TFC. But he's probably not the one you want taking it. That's 4 points they've dropped or whatever it is. That might be the difference between the playoffs and not. They go to Vancouver this week for a midweek game. Sega Koulibaly, Raheem Edwards, both suspended on yellow card accumulation for that game. As Vancouver tries to sort of settle themselves, bounce back from the loss against the Rapids. They still have something to play for. The Galaxy are still a name that comes into your house and you want to play well. This is going to be a tough one. I, at least personally, had sort of kept saying, oh, the Galaxy have that game in hand, game in hand, game in hand. This is it. The other one is Cali Classico at Stanford Stadium, because remember, that got canceled. That's going to be in the middle of the international break, and it's a Cali Classico. Those games are always bonkers and make no sense.
If you're a Galaxy fan, do you want Tata to call up Chicharito so that Jovalich gets the start?
You know they could start more than one forward. He could start anyway.
Cabral is written in pen, whether they're playing a 4-2-3-1 or a 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2, Cabral is out there starting every game. It's
one of my good friends is telling me that Jovalich is a super sub, and I've now stated if the starters are bad and the guy's 22 and a big time signing, this isn't Alan Gordon at 33 years old. Like, he can start.
Whoa,
I knew Kalen was. I didn't know who I could say that wouldn't upset Kalen, because the super sub category is sort of Kalen's spot. Let's mention here the Sounders 3-0 win over Austin FC. Let's start Seattle, not dead. Kalen, I've said for weeks that I think they're going to get in. I still feel pretty strongly about that. It still feels like a good run for them. Was this the big win that they needed, number two team in the Western Conference, or is Austin falling off a cliff as Charlie and Anders tried to yell at me about last Thursday, and it's less impressive?
No, I think it's impressive, and I think partly based on the way it happened. If you look at the quality of the goals, the way they played, and then I think even with some of the changes that they made to the lineup, bringing in Leyva and Atencio, and then putting Rusnak a little bit more advanced. I think they played him a little bit out wide to begin with, but I just think getting him in better spots. He's had to play in deeper lying positions at times just because they've just been so damaged there throughout the season as far as injuries go, with Vargas and Joao Paulo being out. But I think ultimately you want to get him much. We've seen in the best moments of Seattle how he connects the dots between these different pieces and is able to combine and really take things to the next level. And then Ladero, obviously, right? Like, getting him more advanced, and the little cut back to Rui Diaz, and same with Jordan Morris. I love the run that Morris makes there, where he just kind of gives a little jab like he's coming back, and then has that elite separation to be able to get in behind and then square that ball, which is good quick feet actually there from Rui Diaz. Obviously, pretty easy finish, but still, I'm always impressed by just how tidy his footwork is in the box. But I think this team, and the other reason is honestly just going back to what we just talked about, is who do you have confidence in above them?
Yeah, right, big now? Games. Who's gonna seal the deal? You have to believe in
We're
Seattle.
Asking a lot of questions about LA Galaxy in front of them. We're asking questions about Real Salt Lake, Minnesota lost what, 3 in a row now. So you look at the groups above them, and you say, it's not like this group is just all flying, and it's going to take it will take the absolute best from Seattle to have a chance to make this happen. But if you're going to look at their last form and then the form of the teams around them, and then you just look at the sort of credibility of this group, I think they've got a good chance.
Do they get in?
I think they're going to get in. I think the Galaxy are going to be on the outside, and then it would take one more to drop between Salt Lake. I think it'll come down to there's a couple big matches left. Salt Lake plays the Galaxy, right? You guys said. Mm-hmm. And then do they play Seattle too?
Salt Lake are away to Austin, home to Cincy, away to the Galaxy, and finish up home to Portland.
It's a lot of playoff teams.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be tight. I don't know. I'm going to go with the Sounders just on a gut. But I think RSL, if I were to pick the other team, that would still be the one.
So for RSL, 0-0 draw against DC United this weekend at home. They've won one of their last five games. DC, one of the few eliminated teams at home, was probably 3 points for RSL. It has been a struggle over the last few weeks. Congrats to them. They got a new stadium sponsor as well, and the crowd is still electric. They all have the towels. Everything's jumping all the time. Unfortunately, the goals have not followed up with that. You could argue DC was the better team through most of the stretches of this game, which takes us to our 22 under 22 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor. Congratulations to 15-year-old defender Matai Akinboni. He becomes the third youngest player in Major League Soccer history. Unfortunately for him, second youngest in DC history because Freddie Adu, of course, is the youngest. The other one's Alfonso Davies. So it's always a decent list to be on whenever you're connected to Alfonso Davies in any single way. Wayne Rooney, they signed him to a homegrown deal, I believe, a week and a half ago. And Wayne Rooney said after the game, "I think I'm a man of my word. What I said to the players when I came in is if you perform well in training, you'll get your chance. He's been excellent in training. He deserved to come in. He's 15, and I have to protect him, but I just felt he was ready to come in and play. Is he going to play every game? Of course not. He's still very young, but for him and for us to see him playing in an away game in difficult circumstances and performing the way he did at 15, he's got a very bright future." It was exciting for him. An Eastern Conference team hasn't gone and won at RSL in like 3 years. So as he said, this is a really tough away trip. And I'll give you this nugget. I was working on my 22 under 22 player list, and I reached out to a bunch of people around Major League Soccer. And someone not related to DC United in any way reached out and said, "You should put Matai Akinboni on your list. He is special." So that's pretty much as good a praise as you can get for someone at this age who, when we made the list, I think he signed like the day the votes went in. So he wasn't even technically eligible because he was not an MLS player at the time. But a huge moment for him and for DC United there. Let's close out our show with the big game this week. The Campeones Cup. Campeones, Campeones. Kalen was there with me. He was feeling the vibes. NYCFC hosting Atlas at Yankee Stadium coming up here on Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Univision and ESPN2. It is a big game for NYCFC. MLS back-to-back Campeones Cup champions, Atlanta in 2019, Columbus Crew last year. Doyle, this is all the marbles for NYCFC. I joke a little bit, but for a team struggling, this is a chance to win a trophy at home. And for a team that has no international success yet, this could be a really big moment late here for NYCFC.
Yeah, it would be nice to hang another giant banner at Yankee Stadium for this team. You know, Atlas are struggling as well, so they're kind of there for the taking. And as you said, you know, given the way this season has gone for NYCFC, and now that they have Collins and Keaton Parks back, maybe they can use this as a springboard down the stretch to start looking like themselves again, to start playing like the team they were before Ronnie Dyla left in this spring, because they have been, I think they're 5-10-5 since he left, which is obviously you know, one of the worst marks in the league. They one win in their past 10. It's their worst stretch as a club since March
and
April.
Did you say one win in their last 10?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Like, this is the worst they've been since March and April of 2015. Since March and April.
Jason Christ getting shouted out twice on this show. Or his records. Right.
He might want to okay. Skip over this one. But like, this is, you know, we saw the Crew kind of try to use it last year because they, you know, they had a Campeones Cup and they won it. And it ended up being the best moment of the year for them because they didn't make the playoffs. No, NYCFC is going to make the playoffs, but it's looking like they're going to have a pretty forgettable stay. Again, like maybe this ends up being a springboard for them. Who knows? We've seen stranger things happen.
It is. It's going to be an interesting one. Kalen, Doyle specifically said since Ronnie Dyla left, not since Tati. Is that the bigger loss this season for NYCFC? Is that what you sort of put more to the fact that this team was the best team in Major League Soccer over 4 years in terms of points accumulated across those 4 years? And now this year they are fourth in the East, struggling to stay there. Charlotte, I believe, in winning against NYCFC this weekend, are the first expansion team to beat the reigning champions twice in one season. They've done it twice now in the last like 3 weeks. Do you put more of the issues and worry to the changing coach than to losing Tati?
I mean, can I take issue with your question? I mean, it's both. It's both. To lose your manager who has taken you to MLS Cup and proven, you know, to have them playing, you know, really some of the best stuff we've seen in a while. And then to lose your striker, who is the Golden Boot leader mid-season, and for this both to happen like right around the same time, I mean, could try and do that with any team in MLS. I guess actually they did do that. They didn't lose the striker, but they brought in a new man. They lost Patrick Vieira, right? And they brought in Dyla. So I guess from that standpoint, you can maybe take one hit, but taking two at the same time is tough, even for a team with the talent that we've seen. For me, if I had to pick, just to go back and, you know, do your question.
The one that you deny and refuse to answer.
Exactly. The one I'm offended by. I'm going to go with the striker. Sorry. I'm just going to pick the striker. It's going to give you goals. I think it can help you sort of stave off any kind of transition period. And the piece that I see them missing still is Talis Magno is a wonderful player, but he is not getting goals. He's not creating the same opportunities. He seems more comfortable, more in a wide position, being able to have the ball at his feet as opposed to with his back to goal. Although I think if he gets in those soft spots, he can play back to goal and turn and find those little like creases. But that's a lot more difficult when you're right in the middle of two center backs and all the attention is on you and you're not able to kind of find that space in behind. So I think the question is, do you go with Eber? He hasn't been used as much, it seems like, at least from the start.
He's got 5 goals in 900 minutes. Like, that's not incredible ROI, but, like, 5 goals in 900 minutes, you prorate that over a season, that's like a, you know, 13-15 goal season. And you get the bonus of, as you said, leaving Talis Magno on the wing, where he's been much more comfortable and much more effective this year. I think that Nick Cushing has been trying to solve two problems that didn't exist instead of solving the one that absolutely did, which is to say that I think you're wrong. I would take Ronnie Dyla back, Kalen.
I knew you.
big news that Keaton Parks did return against Charlotte, got on the field. Awesome, just because he's a great player and he's been struggling with this blood clot issue and it sucks. And also, they lost Keaton Parks to the playoff race. James Sands was great. They lost James Sands. They didn't really replace that. It was supposed to be other guys elevating to that spot. They haven't been able to do that. So it's going to be interesting what they put out there tonight. This is their chance to sort of play with some of that, I think, in a big game, right? To see, okay, can Eber start and give us the performance at center mid? How healthy and how many minutes can Parks give us? Where is Tavon Gray's best position inside this team right now? There's a lot of question marks, and this is sort of a chance for Cushing to figure them out in a live, intense situation. I can say from being there at the last two, these games have some bite. It's sort of what we've seen now at this point. When you put a Liga MX and an MLS team on the field, we saw it at the Leagues Cup showcase with the Galaxy, LAFC, Club America, Chivas, like, no one wants to lose. Everyone sort of understands what's up for it. Diego Coca looking for a victory as well. This is not a club in Atlas that has any history internationally. So to win a Campeones Cup would be nothing to laugh about for them. And it gets them prepped for CCL because Atlas will be in CCL coming up next year. So a big game. As I said, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Univision, I think, has an hour-long preview show. ESPN2 has the game as well, I believe. Football America will be live on site doing a post-game show as well, like they did at the Open Cup final. So it's going to be a fun event. And if you are in the Bronx or Harlem later today, when you've probably not even seen this show yet, and you want to hang out with me and Kalen, you know where we'll be. I'll be eating the bacalao, but Kalen only likes chicken and rice. So that'll situation there for all of you. Thank you to everyone out there for listening. We'll be back.
Wait, do we have a chicken? Do we have a chicken and rice power rankings?
I'm with you, Joseph.
Like all-time global chicken and rice dishes? Does tagine count with couscous? Then that's number one.
Oh, for sure.
100%.
Jerk chicken and rice is fantastic. Yeah, tagine is 100% number one.
Are you kidding me?
That's
what are you saying?
Old. You ever had hush?
No. With the
come on.
Plums or the prunes and the apricots, and it's slow cooked and it's falling off the bone, and you've got that fresh couscous, just a bed of it underneath. That is the best meal, I think, arguably on the planet.
Wow. I didn't know you were such
a Moroccan
partisan.
I think Moroccan food's the best cuisine in the world, so there you go.
Kalen, you have a take?
I was going jerk chicken. Javon Watson took me to a spot in Houston that I'll never forget. So I should have gone there. I was there last week.
Oh, by the way, if Philly wants to win Supporter Shield, LAFC is hosting the Dynamo in a week or so. Kalen is the Dynamo LAFC whisperer. So if you really want to win, you fly Kalen out for that game. He's already ready.
Take him out for some jerk chicken, man.
Get him to the bank in favor of Philly. Philly for Supporter Shield. So thank you for pausing me there, Doyle, and having that really important conversation. Thank you to all who have made it to this point and are still listening. Shouts to Andrew Wiebe, our partner in soccer. We love him so much. He's just off, and he won't be back, I believe, on Thursday. So you'll hear me again talking and probably stumbling on my MLS Today intro going in to extra time. So thanks for that as well. And we'll talk to you all again soon.